and humor. Thank you. This is the October 12th, 2022 Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting of the Board of Directors of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event that there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom, and you will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial star 9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial star 6 to unmute. For members of the public that are present, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete them and return them to UNI to help expedite public comments. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present the item. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee then comes to consensus to move the item to the board from consideration. And we will consider putting the item on the consent calendar when possible. Any PowerPoint shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCV Water website. All members of the committee are present tonight. And so with that, we'll go straight into the agenda with item number one, the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Cooper, you are closest with your duty honors.
The honor. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So this is the opportunity item number two for public comments on items not on the agenda. We have one comment card from Cam Holtzmeyer to address item number two. So, Judy, when you're ready, Ms. Holtzmeyer, when you are ready.
Can I do it right here?
Sure.
Yes, I put that in just because I'm very excited about what's going to be happening to the Santa Clarita Water Company in a very short time, when for the first time it's going to become a public agency voted on by the people. That's my understanding of it. And I'm really looking forward to that. And I remember the guy that actually did it, and he's dead now. So I took it upon myself to follow up a little bit about how important this is, that because when people are appointed, like you are, just here now, public has no access to you. We can't really recall you. But when they're public like that, I understand from my background and from having watched you for 3-4 years, every single meeting you've ever had, that it was desperately needed. It will be a small group. It will only be 9 members, and they will have to be elected. That means they can also be recalled, is my understanding. That's where we're headed now. And I'm very, very happy about that. And that was the reason he did it. And now I'm talking about the gentleman that actually brought this about. And he did it through LAFCO, which is different than anything you've ever functioned under. And you'll find that out too. But he did it. He did this in LAFCO. I saw it. They are sitting for years. And I was shocked when he died. So I'm just following forward on that, and that's what I'm going to be looking for and demanding. And I will leave it at that.
Thank you. Just for the record, 4 of the 5 board members who are sitting here tonight are all elected. It's been a public agency for a very, very long time, and they're all elected.
Different.
So with that, we can move on then to...
Public comment online.
Okay.
Ms. Cattell, when you're ready.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for letting me speak tonight. I have a general water supply assessment question. I was on the water site tour the other day, and a couple of comments were made, and I'm following up on them. And forgive me if I do not know the exact, the correct terminology for this, but it seems the wells have a capacity, a theoretical capacity that they're evaluated at. However, it seems that their actual production capacity, I think it was stated, is only about 80% of the theoretical capacity. So I was wondering, when you talk about water supply, do you use the theoretical capacity of how they're originally supposed to produce, or the actual production capability of what they're actually producing when you talk about water supply in the water supply assessment? And if it's not the actual production, why not? Thank you.
That sounds like a question relating to item number 3 on the agenda. So if you don't mind, Ms. Cattell, can we have staff do a presentation and then they can address your question at that time?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. So, Rick, if you are ready, would you go ahead and make the presentation regarding reaffirming the recommendation to adopt a resolution?
Real quick intervention. As the committee had already taken action on this item, we did, after you did that, DWR was its new final delivery capability for 2021. And that's the reason why we're coming back to the committee to give you the opportunity to consider this again, before it comes to the board.
Thank you, Doug. And with that, Rick, if you are ready.
Sure. Can everyone see the presentation?
Yes.
Yep.
Great. Thanks, everyone. And good evening, committee members. Like Dirk said, I'm here tonight to discuss a few updates to the water supply assessment that was prepared for the Shadowbox Studio development. Sorry, I wasn't here last month. I was on vacation, and Sarah sounded like she did a really good job of filling in. But hopefully this will answer some of the board's questions from last month. So first, I'll do a quick presentation outline. I'll discuss the Shadowbox Studios project's updated water demands, then discuss the new final 2021 Department of Water Resources State Water Project Delivery Capability Report. Then we'll look at some updated projections of our single dry year supply and demand. And finally, I'll make our staff's conclusions and recommendations. Just for review, the Shadowbox Studios development is a planned full-service film television studio campus, and it's being developed on approximately 94 acres within our service area. The project consists of about 43,000 square feet of sound stages, 561,000 square feet of workshops, warehouses, and support uses, 221,000 square feet of production and administration offices, about 37,000 square feet of catering and specialty services, and about 17 acres of landscape irrigation. So the projected water demands for the project were still calculated using the same methods we use to calculate future demand in the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. The demands have been updated from the last presentation due to some rounding issues and also me accidentally flipping the commercial and industrial totals in the demand, the MAD categories here. So basically the 65 0.9 was up in the commercial and the 74 was down in the industrial. I know Director Ford caught that on us. So when we did the updates with the and redid them, it actually lowered the demand for the project by about 1 acre foot. So the demands in an average year are now projected to be 196 acre feet per year, with the demands increasing to 207 acre feet in a single dry year and 200 acre feet per year in multiple dry years. These totals do reflect additional demand of 25.6% above the model water efficiency landscape ordinance standards and a 3.77% climate change factor. So our previous analysis used the draft 2021 delivery capability report, but now we have the final report, and that was used for our latest supply analysis. The report was finalized in September and now uses an updated CalSIM 3 model assumption with a longer hydrologic record going from 1922 to 2015 compared to the CalSIM 2 model from 2019 used in the urban plan that ran through 2003. The final report indicated the current state water project reliability to be reduced from 58% down to 56% in average years and from 7% to 6% in single dry years. And future reliability was set at 52% in average years and down to 4% in a single dry year. These changes are reflective of a more conservative sea level rise estimates increasing from 45 centimeters to 55 centimeters. Staff has selected an even more conservative assumption from our state water project deliveries in single dry years. In this, we assume no guarantee of San Luis Reservoir carryover water. And we ended up using a 3% current allocation and dropping to 2% in the future. These changes resulted in minor modifications to our reliability tables, as you'll see on the next slide. So as this table shows, staff used the 2021 DWR delivery capability report, table A supply reliability assumptions for average years and multiple years. But in single dry years, we figured more conservatively than the report. These percentages assumed that carryover supplies would not be incorporated into available dry year table A supplies, as it was assumed in the DWR report. And due to these changes, our water balance analysis for normal years, single dry years, and multiple dry years has changed slightly, but supplies still exceed demands over the next 30 years.
This is what the public commenter was talking about, that alluvial aquifer and Saugus aquifer supply. Can somebody comment on that at this point, either you, Rick, or like, how is that calculated? Is that calculated with the run wells running at max capacity, typical capacity? How is that calculated for those rows?
That is calculated based on the typical operational capacity, not the well capacity or the pump capacity for references. We have included those numbers in the tables along with the typical production out of each well. But when we actually do sum those up for these Saugus and handle the field production. It's strictly on the anticipated production, which is all, was also documented in the groundwater sustainability plan.
And I think also, didn't we used to have an operating plan?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's...
It's all considered the operating plan.
Okay.
But in the groundwater sustainability plan, we got a lot more details as to how much water was coming out of which well.
Okay, and this is all consistent with that, and it is not all the wells running at max capacity. Yes. Thank you.
Can I just follow up on that real quick? All right. That 80% number is not really a useful in this discussion. In fact, as I understand it, if you were to look at 80% of the max capacity of all of our wells and add them all together, would far exceed these numbers. So this is substantially less than both the theoretical capacity and that 80% number, which from a practical standpoint would be the maximum capacity, given their wells need to be maintained and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the 80% is kind of a rule of thumb number that the ops folks say is, what's the practical maximum that you can get out of a well? Would be that 80%, because you're filling a reservoir and maybe turning the pump off for a while and you turn it back on later.
So many things cause it to be less, but it's substantially less than 80% even.
Yeah.
So neither of those numbers is included in here.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rick, if you want to go on, please. Sure.
Not a problem. Glad we could clear that up. So the summary table here, we show that the projected water supply is sufficient to meet demands for all normal, single, dry, and multi-year dry periods through 2050. The water demand for the Shadowbox Studios project is included in these calculations. So in conclusion, staff has reevaluated the State Water Project Table A availability using the most up-to-date 2021 DWR delivery capability report with more conservative methodology. Demand projections were based on population projections, county and city land use plans, both active and passive conservation, and climate change impacts. The water supply concluded that the total projected water supplies over the 30-year projection period will be sufficient to meet the projected demands associated with the proposed Shadowbox Studios development, as well as existing and planned future uses. That being said, staff's recommendation is that the committee reaffirm its recommendation that the Board of Directors of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency adopt a resolution approving the SB 610 water supply assessment for the Shadowbox Studios development and direct staff to submit the water supply assessment to the City of Santa Clarita. And I'd be happy to try to answer any additional questions.
Thank you, Rick. We do have one public comment card on this item, Ms. Neltemeyer.
Is it on what you're doing right now?
Yes, item number
is
three.
What you're proposing. Yes. I often question, because I've sat through many, many of your meetings where you go through this whole procedure. And the main thing is, do you have the water or don't you? And that's what's going to be decided in the future. But here... I marked so many of them in here. I could spend all afternoon reading them. We have 6 Saugus wells complaining, well, they're down because contaminated with this, with that. We got to take them down. And then the solution was, well, we'll just drill more wells. I have this in writing. That's making it simple so you understand it. But this is the whole report here. And I've been doing this for years. I read through all the reports. And that's exactly what's going on here. You know, it's like a little game you can play to put through whatever you want, whenever you want, and there's no consequences. But I think the new board will find that there will be consequences because the public will be able to see what's going on and will say, hey, let's just get rid of them. But we don't have that opportunity before. And I didn't bring that about. The gentleman who died, that. And I just want to make sure that because it was, that it isn't just dropped. We'll have those elections. There'll only be 9 of you on that board. That's the way it's set up right now, in a matter of months. So that's my position here. And like I said, I've been watching because I used to do this professionally and have a nice retirement fund. But that's what you have to look at, is that the reality. You can talk about all these things and they're good to a certain percent, but the real thing is, do you have the water? And is it going in the right places? And a lot of, now, here, you want to approve a huge development. And you're saying, trying to say, yes, we have enough water for this big development. And you will approve it. Because that's what you do. And you've been doing. And that's the only thing you do. But what he did was he went through
life. Thank you, Ms. Little
Fire.
Ms. Cottrell, I think your question was answered. I'm not certain if you wanted to follow up at all.
She does have her hand.
Okay.
Yes, I do. I wanted to make sure that I understood that I didn't think it was actually related to this, but that I think it was answered that the anticipated production is based on previous actual production. So I think that's what I heard. Is that true? Is that correct? And then I have another question. The other question is, I hope you realize that this development that you're looking at is in a floodway, and which is currently a recharge area that would be impacting Placerita Creek, which is a blue line stream, and it's in a rural equestrian special standards district. I know that's not your area of expertise. It's up to the city, but I just thought I'd remind you. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff, you want to address at least the first one?
Yes. The water supply assessment, the well production, the water supply assessment considers past operation of various wells, and also takes into consideration future, existing and future production, as it might be constrained by the operation of future treatment facilities. Also, the modeling projects groundwater levels, and the pumping is designed to protect the biodiversity ecosystems along the river. So a number of factors come into play with the numbers that are used in this water supply assessment for groundwater.
Thank And with regard to your second question, that majority of the items you mentioned, like as you noted, are really decisions for the land use planning agency and the CEQA process, as well as the permitting agencies in the case of jurisdictional waters for the state and the federal government. Okay, with that, questions from members of the committee for staff on this item? Director Hermitage.
Okay. Well, I have a comment, so did the question go first? Because then
mine is going to be a comment as well. So
okay.
Please go first.
Thank you. So first of all, thank you for the presentation and for helping us understand the difference from last version to this version. Appreciate that. I'm glad you were on vacation. Hope you came back refreshed. That's always important. So my comment is in relation to the letter that we're sending back to the city, and in other cases, the county, right? Whoever we're sending this back to. I want to say thank you for the added language that's being added to the letter. I'm assuming this will be kind of language that will be added kind of in all the water supply assessments going forward. I think it's a really great start, and I applaud this and bringing attention to, I think, what are some really important points to the city and the county. And it specifically refers to recommending compliance with the MUELO, the Model Water Efficiency Landscape Ordinance, and also recommending adherence to the low impact development water quality and hydro modification standards. And in looking, I know we had this last time, but I spent a little bit more time this time around actually looking at the standards so I could better understand them. And so I think maybe I need to take some time, maybe with staff outside of this meeting, because I don't want to take up time today, to maybe better understand it. Because it seems to me that what is referred to in this letter maybe deals a little bit more with flood prevention issues. And my, I guess I would like to see a little bit more highlight our concerns about encouraging practices and bringing attention to standards that are related to groundwater infiltration and replenishment. Because I feel as a water agency that provides drinking water, that's kind of our focus, maybe more so than flood prevention. So I'm wondering if we could, I'm going to push a little bit more and see if we can maybe add a little bit of that language in. And then my broken record statement, I'd still like to see this language added into the actual water supply assessment document, since that's what we as the board end up voting on in the end when it comes back to the whole board. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Dr. Cooper. No, I was going to make a comment. We've gone through several of these, and I'm glad you updated it from the reliability report that we got back from DWR. I think that's very helpful, and it's good to know that even though they reduced their reliability a few percent, that we are still well within our means of providing water to this for the next 30 years. So with that, I would move that we move this on to the board in I don't see a reason why we couldn't do this in consent. We've done a number of them, so it should be fairly easy.
I'm in favor of that. I do also have a comment on, but I'm in favor of consent. I just wanted to offer a different view on commenting on flood control and the very good points by the public commenter on the blue line streams. I view this as meeting a regulatory requirement for water supply assessment. I think we've talked about before, if you start going outside the boundaries of that, I think it could be problematic for multiple reasons. I mean, frankly, it could be a liability issue if you comment on things that you're not asked to comment on. And you know, I think the appropriate point to comment on flood control, infiltration streams is in the EIR review process. And my understanding from staff is that we do take a look when that EIR is out about those discussions. Is that correct? And Dirk said yes. So in case anybody thought that was, you know, direction to add flood control, I think the Muello stuff in here is good because that's specifically on how we count water. And frankly, that's why it's upsized, is because we know they don't enforce it. So I think that fits with counting water, but then when we start talking about other stuff, I think there's a different place for that. It's my view.
Comment? I just wanted to ask you, Rick, do you know this 55 centimeters of sea level rise and possible warming, did they give us data for what they expect in the way of warming, or where this potential sea level rise would be measured at?
I did not see that in that document at all. It just stated that they raised it. It didn't really give I didn't see an explanation of why. I can look back into it and let you know, but I did not see, it's actually a very short document. And then there's just a lot of tables an addendum to it. So the text itself is pretty light, I did not see anything of any explanation of why they decided to raise that other than it just being more conservative. Unless Dirk, I don't know if Dirk had seen anything. He was the one that knew about it coming out. So
my understanding is that they chose to use the higher sea level rise to be consistent with the analysis that's being done for the Delta Conveyance Project. It's a, let's see, the 45 centimeters was based on a 5% exceedance factor, meaning that when they looked at the whole array of models, they estimated that there was only a 5% chance that sea level rise would be greater than the 45 centimeters. This is even more conservative than that, and they don't even have a probability of exceedance that's associated with it. It's just a very conservative estimate on sea level rise by 2040.
I'm starting to sound like a broken record, but Dirk, you know where Port Chicago is?
Yes.
So Port Chicago is in Sousson Marsh. And this is the Delta Outlet, that's where I would think we would see sea level rise. There is a NOAA tide gauge there that measures mean sea level and the change over time. And so, not completely trusting models, having used a lot of them, I took a look at it, and it's the rate of rise there is less than 2 millimeters per year, plus or minus 1.34, which that would give us slightly over 275 years to get to 55 centimeters in that regard. So I don't know. There's some point, obviously, it would be cumbersome to push back on that particular issue. Even at Alameda, down the coast a bit, it's even less than that, less than 1 millimeter per year. So anyway, that's something on the order of 600 years before we get the 55 centimeters. I mean, these are all linear too. We're not seeing over the course of the record of these tidal gauges any kind of non-linear growth rate. So just bear in mind as you go forward, I don't think we have much choice at this point, but particularly in light of the conveyance, we don't
We don't want to annoy DWR.
Okay.
And I'll send Rick the graphs just so he can see.
That'll be great.
I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy.
That's really good information. And going back to commenting on EIRs, that might be a good comment for us to put in on the Delta Conveyance project.
That one could hurt, yeah. Okay, then I would agree, at least the directors I heard, let's go ahead and move it forward and do so on consensus. Director Armitage, I didn't hear from you. Do you want to move it forward?
No, I mean, that's fine. Okay.
I'll be ready to present.
Please do.
I just want to speak to what you brought up and explain the reason that I'm happy to see that additional language in the letter going out. I just feel like, you know, all of these numbers that we see on all these tables and charts, you know, they're based on modeling and kind of best guesses, right? Like we're just using what we think is going to happen. But it is uncertain. And I think we've seen some trends recently that are troubling to us, right?
What trends? I haven't.
Well, related to all the aridification, and we're not sure what the cycles of drought are going to be going forward. You know, precipitation patterns are going to change, those types of things. Additionally, I feel like there's the public perception out there that, you know, everybody's being told to conserve water now. We don't know how long that ask is going to last, yet we continue to approve development. I mean, if you look on any social media, that comment comes up time and time and time again. That is a public perception that is out there, right? So the reason I'm glad to see this type of language is I feel like it's making it so that, you know, we're cognizant of these issues. You know, according to the Urban Water Management Plan, the water's there. But, you know, just in case, maybe that margin is smaller than we think in the future, you know, let's ask the builders and developers to work with us to be those partners in conservation. And there's already standards on, you know, on the books. And so we're just reminding them of that and asking them to please, let's work together, use these standards. And I think it's just a good reminder. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I don't know if there's I'm fine with how it's written now.
Yeah.
I don't think we should add in other comments here on infiltration, flood control, stream bank stuff.
Well, I mean, my point was, I feel like it's very, the way the language is, and I try to read the low impact development standards quickly today. I feel like it's more focused on flood control and prevention and not, and again, I think our concern is we want to continue having groundwater, right? We want to replenish our groundwater supply so we can continue to pump to whatever capacity is. But if we continue to build over particularly higher recharge areas, just to be cognizant of that, right? Be aware of that and trying to keep and protect the areas that where our water is replenished so we can continue to have it. That was my point.
Thank you. Dr. Cullen.
So I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of disagreement here. I agree with the point that providing too much detail in the actual 610 assessment, which is a document we're required to produce, and it is required to provide specific information. So I don't think it would be appropriate to put more comments in that than beyond what is called for by AB 610. But I don't disagree with you that in a letter, I mean, the more we can get out there our concerns, the better. I don't see any reason we wouldn't want to put them both in comments to the EIR and in a letter to accompany them and any place else we, you know, that we can express our concerns. So I think that both of those thoughts are reasonable and valid. So I would disagree with the initial thing that you said of putting it into the 610 itself, but I agree with you that communicating them multiple times is a good thing. Thanks.
And I would agree with you, Director Colley.
That you got, because you were the one that made the comment about not having extraneous information, but you feel like extraneous information would be okay in the letter.
Yes.
But not in the text.
Yes, because the planning staff will take the water supply assessment as an appendix to an EIR in this case and say, you know, the water supply have been evaluated per the requirements of state law, and water supplies are adequate. Therefore, they're will not be a significant environmental impact. But if we put in lots of language saying, you know, you need to keep in permeable surfaces, and we do so in the body of the water supply assessment, then pretty soon city staff says, well, is this a significant impact?
Is it right. Water or not?
Yeah. So, are we trying to?
And that we as Director Colley and I think Director Armitage also noted, that is fair game in our comments back to land use agency at the time of public review for the document.
Right.
It's just that we have under the law here a well-defined responsibility. They being the planning agencies, have a well-defined role vis-a-vis that requirement. And you shouldn't muddy them too much between the two.
Right.
Yeah, this is a very early stage of supplying water to the project. So the WSA really isn't a place to put this in, but further down the road, it certainly is. When we start reviewing the EIRs, it really comes into it.
I'm trying to resolve the issue that some people think we should put more in the cover letter and some people don't. And I'm relying on what you said before.
I think the cover letter was a compromise that we came up with at the time, which works, but I think honestly that the planning agencies say, that's good thoughts. I'll look into it, but the water supply assessment and
just
the level of impact
from
municipal services to water is what we're looking for here for purposes of CEQA.
So should we modify the letter further or not?
We could finesse it, but I don't see any.
I don't. Okay, I was just trying to.
But I do agree with you. I mean, that's exactly what our goals are. And I think we all agree with that. It's just at this stage, it probably isn't necessary. But down the road, it certainly is as we move on.
Well, I think the earlier you say it, the better, I think, in the process. Like, let her know in the beginning that we recommend adhering to all these standards. I mean, I don't think you can say too much in the where we are right now in terms of aridification in our state and cycles of drought. I think it's a good thing to say it more. So
these are the city and county standards that you're
right.
That's what we're referring to. So yes, we can point that out to them and say, hey, you need to adhere to your own standards. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we have consensus to move on.
Gotcha.
Put on the consent calendar, but yes, as you said, Rick,
stand by. Yeah.
Thank you for the presentation. And with that, we can move on to what's my programming? Item 4.1, Dirk, I don't know if you want to lead into this, just let Sarah.
Yes.
Sarah go. Sarah, when you are ready, the status of water supply and banking programs.
Okay, one second. Okay. Well, hello, everyone. If you recall, I was supposed to do a status of water supply and water banking program update last month. I got through the water supply update with Matt in our co-presentation, but I wasn't able to finish off with the water banking program. So as we planned last month, I'm going to finish the presentation I meant to do last month and stick with the water banking programs update. So we're going to walk through our banking and exchange supplies, look at the balances and where we are now, and kind of look into the future to see where we would be at if these dry conditions persist. And then we'll go through a couple new program updates too. So we're going to start with the banking and exchange programs. And so the programs we have listed here will be available in 2023. And the balances that I show are the balances we anticipate at the beginning of 2023. So we start with our banking programs. We have the Rosedale Rio Bravo banking program and a semi-tropic water storage district banking program. I'm going to go through just a quick review of each program, just because it's always good to hear. You guys don't hear about these too much. So I'll give a little description of each program, and please ask more questions if you need to at the end. So it's just mostly review. But our Rosedale Rio Bravo Water District banking program, we got into that agreement in 2005 and went almost 10 years before our first recovery with that program. This program allows us to store up to 2,000 acre feet in the time period. Basically, the 2,000 acre feet stored and withdrawn is the time frame of the agreement. So however long it takes us to put 200,000 acre feet in and take it out is the length that the agreement will be for. We can store up to 100,000 acre feet at one time. You can see listed here, we have 58,810 acre feet stored currently or will be available for us to utilize in the future. So we're about half full right now. And then each year we can put up to 20,000 acre feet into the bank and we can withdraw 10,000 acre feet a year using our first priority recovery capacity, but we can go up to 20,000 acre feet if additional Rosedale capacity is available for us as well. So that's our Rosedale program. Moving on to the semi-tropic program. This one's a little bit different and of course confusing, so stick with me. The semi-tropic water storage district has two banking programs. There's the original banking program and then their second banking program was the stored water recovery unit. And that's where we joined into this banking program with the second phase. We got into this banking program in 2015 and were able to store up to 15,000 acre feet in their banking program. But prior to that, we delivered two one-time large amounts of water to them. So in 2002, we sent them about 24,000 acre feet. And again, in 2003, we sent them 35,000 acre feet. So we have these one-time storage agreements prior to the banking program. And all of that water was grandfathered into our banking program. So you can see that our balance is 30,000, a little over 30,000 acre feet right now. And so that basically, as we pull water out of this program, we have to first utilize those first amounts that we put in that got grandfathered in. And then once we get below 15,000 acre feet, you'll see us kind of cycling up and down to the 15,000 acre feet. So we have 30,000 acre feet in that program available to recover. We can put 5,000 acre feet a year into this program, and we can recover 5,000 acre feet a year from this program at first priority. Moving on, we have two exchange programs. We have both of these exchange programs were done in 2019. If you recall, it was our last really, really wet year. They're both two-for-one exchanges, one with AVEC and one with United. Both of these programs, we can get the water back as long as the State Water Project allocation is at 30% or higher. So we have to have a somewhat decent allocation to utilize this water. In the AVEC program, we gave AVEC 7,500 acre feet and they return to us 3,750. We did utilize about 1,400 acre feet in 2020. So you can see that the amount we have left to recover is about 2,300 acre feet from that agreement. And then the United Water Conservation District, we gave them 1,000 acre feet in return 500 acre feet, and we have not recovered any of that. So we do have the 500 acre feet available still. So I put together a graphic that looks at all of our banking and exchange program balances together. each year as a whole and where we are at the beginning of each year and how our storage has changed since 2020, because at 2020, we were pretty full. You can see here, each bar represents all our programs stacked up. In 2020, our Rosedale program was full. We were at 100,000 acre feet. We had quite a bit in semi-tropic as well, and quite a few exchanges, more so than I explained just now. So I only covered the exchange programs that are still available to us, but we have utilized a few others since 2020, but we used all that water. So they kind of get mixed out of the presentation. In this, you'll see that, you know, we've been utilizing our storage pretty frequently. And you can see at the bottom there, I've put in red, the water year type. So I wanted to kind of walk through each year to kind of take you back. This is like a story, I guess, with a graphic, but take you back and kind of go through why we've been using so much stored water and kind of give you an idea of how important it has been to help us get through these challenging years. So excuse me. So in 2020, we started out at about 165,000 acre feet. Again, we were just about full in our banking programs. It was a very dry year, but it was also the beginning of when we started having to turn wells off for the PFAS regulations. So we were pretty short with our local supplies, and we ended up utilizing about 33,000 acre feet that year of our dry year supplies. The majority of the water that we used first for this was our exchange programs, because we want to lean on those first as much as we can, and then we move into our banking programs. So the majority of the water utilized was from our exchange programs, and then some from the banking. Moving into 2021, we started the year with about 142,000 acre feet. It was a critical year, 5% allocation, very dry, very hot. And we ended up recovering a full 20,000 acre feet from our Rosedale program and 5,000 acre feet from our semi-tropic program that year. This was the year that our N wells came back online, but those were the only wells that we were able to get back online from PFAS. So we were still pretty constrained with our local supplies. Moving into 2022, we started the year at 117,000 acre feet. Another critical year this year, another 5% allocation. And we're going to end up recovering about 25,000 acre feet again. If you recall at the last committee meeting, I talked to you about putting some of this banked water that's not utilized into backup storage. And so in 2021 and in 2022, we were taking as much banked water as we can in preparation for another dry year, just staying ahead of, you know, making sure we can get that water when we need it. So moving some of that water out of the groundwater banks when it's constrained at certain times of the year and putting it into San Luis Reservoir gives us the ability to utilize that when needed. So the majority of those 2 years recovery came to our service area and was utilized to meet demand. And then small portions of it were backed up. Moving into 2023, I anticipate our banking to be at about 92,000 acre feet. I'm thinking if it's very dry again, we may need to take another 15,000 acre feet from Rosedale. 10,000 acre feet would be kind of that firm amount that we can recover from Rosedale. And then we have that Irvine Ranch short-term exchange program that we can lean on for that additional 5,000 acre feet of firm recovery if we need it. And I'll get into that program a little bit more in the next slide. But worst case scenario, 15,000 acre feet from Rosedale and 5,000 acre feet from semi-tropic again. As we move into another potentially drier critical year. After that happens, we get to 2024. By this time, I'm hoping my story will change, but if it does continue to stay dry, you know, this graphic is showing us that we would be, you know, about 70,000 acre feet available for dry year storage. If it continues to be dry, the firm amount we could get from our banking programs is about 15,000 acre feet. At that time, it may be more, just depending on what's happening at Rosedale and if there's other capacity available. But when it's dry, there's a lot of competition, so that's never guaranteed. So we would end up starting 2025 with about 56,000 acre feet, and that's about 33,000 in Rosedale and 20,000 in semi-tropic. Now, though the graphic shows us going down pretty significantly, 56,000 acre feet is about three more years worth of firm recovery from our banking programs. So if we do continue to be dry past that point or have challenges that we just don't know are coming yet with local supplies or other supplies, you know, we still have a significant cushion if we need it moving forward. So hopefully that graphic tells that story. It was a long one, but sorry. So moving on, AVEC banking program. So the AVEC Phase 2 High Desert Water Bank is a potential program that we're looking to participate in the future. And Dirk and Steve have been working with them, just trying to get us into participate. So in July, Dirk and Steve actually went to the AVEC facilities and discussed the banking program. In August, SCB Water sent our official letter of intent to say we were interested in participating. We're looking at anywhere from 10 to 20,000 acre feet of storage and recovery per year, with about 80 to 100,000 acre feet of banking capacity. And then this fall, we're expecting to see AVEC to send out the draft MOU so we can get more information about that and go from there. And then lastly, I wanted to just cover the Irvine Ranch Water District exchanges. So we have one exchange that we've already executed in May, which was the short-term exchange. This was just a short-term deal that was available to us this year and could be available to us next year if needed to provide just a little bit of extra security and making sure we can get that water from Rosedale. If you recall, this agreement, it's a one-for-one exchange so basically this agreement allows SCB Water to utilize Irvine Ranch's first priority pumping capacity to recover our water. So they have the pumping capacity and we have the water. So we use their capacity to get our water. And if we do that, we give them exactly what we use their capacity for. So if we recover 2,500 acre feet of water this year or next year, we give them 2,500 acre feet back anytime the state water project allocation is above 45%. In 2022, we had to estimate whether or not we would need their capacity. And so we did request up to 2,500 acre feet from them to recover. It's still to be determined if we actually utilize their facilities for recovery or not. It's been a bit of a crazy year, and Rosedale's been doing some new and interesting things with regards to making sure they can meet their banking partner and demands. And so they've done some interesting things. So we're going to finalize whether or not we needed to use their capacity at the end of the year. Right now, I really don't think we have. I think that Rosedale's had additional capacity available to us. So if that's the case, we would not need to return 2,500 acre feet to Irvine Ranch for the 2022 year. And then with regards to next year, you saw that I had potentially using that that program to help us get up to 15,000 acre feet in the Rosedale program. So that is still available if we need it, and we can use that up to 5,000 acre feet. So we just kind of have to see how the winter goes and then go from there. We've been waiting on the long-term exchange option. We had a draft. We've been going back and forth with negotiations on this. Reason being is just that Irvine Ranch has got a lot of agreements and a lot of things are layered. It's very complicated. And we want to really make sure that this agreement is clear and we understand when and how we could get our water in and out of their facilities with regards to this exchange. So again, it's still in negotiation. We at this point don't know when it will be ready. So we'll just kind of keep updating you as it goes. It's not necessarily an emergency agreement that needs to be done now, because it's already looking like it will be another dry year. And if we do have a ton of water, we've got a lot of space in Rosedale that we can put that water and start filling that bank back up. So this is kind of sidelined for a little bit until we can get all the agreement correct. And then lastly, I have this fun graphic I found. You know, this has been an up and down presentation. I know I have some stuff that's just not the best information. We have been using our banking programs, but I think it's really important to recognize how important they've been and how much they've been able to support us and how they can be utilized in these challenging times. So whether that's glass half empty or half full, it's kind of up to you, but I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Sarah. I have no cards on me. Is there anybody online?
There is none.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee for Sarah? Maria.
Quick one. Sarah, the 80 to 100,000 acre feet of storage at AVEC, would that be our storage potential, or is that everybody's storage potential?
That would just be for us.
That's amazing. Okay. Yeah, thank you. But they are doing multiple participants. Okay, I see Dirk nodding. Okay. Yeah, they got a lot. Got a lot of storage up there. Okay, that's it.
Director Cooper.
Sarah, on the AVEC, you know, I think that's great. 100,000 acre feet of storage along with Rosedale Rio Bravo. That would be absolutely wonderful. Whose wells would be the recovery out of AVEC?
Oh, as part of the program, AVEC would drill new wells.
And then would we participate in those, or would we just use those for recovery?
We would, as a participant, we're going to end up paying for those wells. Those wells will be dedicated for recovering water from that phase.
So it's not going to be an issue like we ran into with Rosedale Rio Bravo on installing wells.
No, these are new wells that are being installed specifically for the program.
Wonderful. And then Irvine, it's really a kind of a two-for-one swap when you pull 2,500 of our own out. Of course, we want to replace our 2,500 at some point, and then we replace their 2,500. Is it just a paper transfer? Since it's all in the same basin with Rosedale Rio Bravo, then we just isn't it just a paper transfer when you're above 45%?
It could be. They could take water out of our banking facility if we don't have the water within that time frame that we need to return it by. We could transfer some water, you know, that's already been stored. We're hoping that we will have lots of water to deliver to them. So
yeah, we prefer it to be a wet, physical wet water going in there as opposed to pulling more water out of our banking program.
Very good. Good. Thank you. Excellent presentation. Thank you.
Director Carley.
So, Sarah, you know, I too am very concerned about our current situation today, but just a suggestion for maybe future presentations. I'd also like to see if you could think about how to put a graphic together that shows when we do start to get an opportunity to recharge these programs, how quickly we can do it. How do we get back to that 160 that we were 3 years ago? How quickly can we do it? That concerns me that... And looking out 10 years from now, you know, even if we have some wet years, that we'll not be able to get these things fully recharged and available for the next crisis, so to speak. So is it possible for you to sort of look at that possibility and make up scenarios with a couple of wet years? And
I can make up all sorts of things if you want me to.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm asking. Yeah.
I think the best way would be able to utilize the new reliability model, because we can run some of those scenarios against the historical hydrology and kind of really get a better idea. But, you know, just preliminarily, stuff that I've seen, and it's not finalized yet, it really does show those getting filled up very quickly, because when it rains fast. So, you know, essentially, if we had 2 years, and I guess, you know, anywhere over 50% allocation, we're going to have water available to put into storage. And I think that would be a priority, especially for Rosedale, because, you know, we've taken a pretty decent chunk out. So, you know, assume if we had 20,000 acre feet a year to throw in there, it would only take us 2 years to get it full again.
If you had, so you put 40, if you put 40,000 in, mm-hmm. and you're in 2025 down at, I forget what the number was, you put 40 on it, it doesn't fill it back up, right?
Well, it doesn't fill it back up, but I'm hoping that this drought can't possibly continue for that long. So, I mean, I don't anticipate us having to pull 20,000 out to 2025, because we're going to be getting our alluvial wells back online. We're going to have new Saugus wells. So by 2025, we should not be needing 20,000 acre feet from our banking supplies, especially in dry years like this, unless there's some kind of an emergency, because we would be able to lean on the Saugus wells and use our local supplies more. Right now, we're just so constrained with our local supplies, we're having to lean very heavily on our banking supplies. So right. This is, I mean, hoping that what I showed you today is worst case scenario.
Right. I understand that's, it assumes that things stay bad, but I think we need to be planning for things staying bad. We can hope for things getting better, but we better not just use that as our policy going forward. No. So I just want to encourage you to help us think about beyond the next couple of years of potential crisis and looking, because I mean, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, we were making sure that we had that 160 available to us. And so it's great that we did that. And then today, if we don't have the ability to get back to that, that concerns me, and just want to make sure that we do. And I think obviously the High Desert project will help that. And I think that you could provide us some graphics that show with and without that, you know, what those scenarios would be, looking again, the 10 or 20 year horizon. Because I just don't want to focus on today's crisis and miss the fact that we're also responsible for 10 to 20 years from now, or 30 or 40. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. I guarantee every opportunity I have to put water in, I'll be sharing that with the committee. Oh, yeah. As the winter comes along, I'll be like, I think there might be 5,000 acre feet. What do you think? So the reliability model, I think, is going to be best for that 10 to 20 year outlook. And Najwa is going to have a lot more information on that, I believe, towards the end of the year.
Well, you're talking about the state project.
The gold.
Yeah. I think that it's probably worth less than the paper it's written on, but that's just my own personal.
No, we're not talking about that. Reliability report. She was referring to the new gold sim model, which is, you know, integrates all of our supplies and demand.
Oh, okay. Our local. Okay. I thought you were talking about states. Okay. All right. We not. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was just going to have a follow up to what you were talking about. Whenever you, again, not urgent, but whenever you do educate us next on this, like, what is the goal? Is the goal to get back where you were, given that we're adding AVAC? Is the goal, you know, cumulatively that? Do we want more than that? Going forward, I don't, you know, there's always a balance between, you know.
Cost and reliability.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we could, you know, probably, well, not all over the place, but, you know, there's probably a point that is really too much and unnecessary and impractical. And we probably have a goal somewhere that I don't know where to find that. So if you could just touch on it really high level when this comes up again.
Okay. Yeah, I think overall the goal is to, when there's wet years, be able to utilize all the water. And the more programs we have available to do that, to, when we have the water, we have programs to put it into, when it's wet, that's the most beneficial, because then that allows us to have more programs to pull water out of too. Yeah. And
the total acre feet in storage, like what's our goal?
Yeah. Total acre feet in storage.
Yeah. Like if, like what would make you happy and say, we don't need to add more, or we don't need to. nothing.
I mean, I was really happy at 160, but I'd never really, I think until this point, we've maybe not utilized our resources as much as we have. So I think it's time to reevaluate those goals and say, you know, I think that's one thing we're looking at with the reliability work that Naja was doing on the Goldstone model, to be able to figure out that sweet spot.
Okay.
You know, and we're going to use that model to try to figure that out, because I think those questions are coming up. I mean, there's a sweet spot for lots of stuff. And now the conditions we're seeing it's important to have the storage, but where do we want to be in case these droughts last longer?
Yeah.
How long do we need to have it for? And I think then we can decide what that sweet spot is. So.
Okay.
Thank
you. Thank you for the presentation, Lori. And sorry we went so long last time that you had to come back for a part two this time.
That's okay.
Regarding the AVEC banking, I think, and you know, a number of us are, I think we're all impressed with the potential capacity of that. And I just wanted to confirm from my mind, the water source that we would need to bank water there, that's State Water Project water, right?
Correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure I understood that. And then to kind of piggyback on the comment that Director Colley made, that slide that shows us the downward trend for both the banking and exchange balances, I think that was a really good visual in communicating kind of that important analysis we need to be doing around that and understanding how important it is to replenish that. And I would just encourage you, maybe as we have these conversations again, when it's relevant, to go back to that slide, use that again, and then kind of build off of that to show us how we can work towards bringing that back up to whatever we decide our goal is in the future. So thank you for that visual. I think that was really, that communicated that very well. So I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I added that slide to the co-presentation that Matt and I are going to do for the whole board. So hopefully that will be beneficial.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
More questions? Thank you, Sarah. The banking programs have performed admirably. We could use a year like 2019 to rebuild. And then with that, we'll move on to item 4.2, staff activities. Okay. Then we can go to item 5.1. Matt Dickens, the status of drought response and performance.
Hello, Director Ford. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Let me get my presentation set up here. Display setting, walk presenter view. Oops, I got to do this again. Share screen. Share. Slideshow from beginning. SWAT presenter view. Okay, can you guys see my screen okay?
Yes.
All right, fantastic. Well, good evening, and thank you, Chair Ford, for the opportunity to provide an update about the drought, the status of drought response and performance, and also thank you to the members of the committee and those on the call joining us tonight. I'm Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager, and it's a pleasure to be here to provide these updates. Tonight's presentation overview, similar to those that I provide monthly, will incorporate and include updates on or an overview of the regulatory status that is driving our drought engagement and activities. That's from the statewide level, as well as those enacted by SCV Water. We will look at our SCV Water Drought Ready. That is the status of our water shortage contingency plan, programs and communication efforts, as well as water restrictions and other strategies to help encourage conservation during this drought emergency. We'll look at our demand performance specific to drought performance, because I am going to provide a presentation after following this presentation talking about our normal conservation activities. So we'll change the frame a little bit there. So I'll talk about our normal conservation performance in the next presentation. We'll look at the next steps, what's on the radar, and then we'll conclude with questions and answers. Okay, so turning to regulatory status, I really don't have any updates specific to the drought to present to the committee. We are still operating under all of those that we were operating under last month. That includes Governor Newsom's 15% voluntary conservation call for all Californians to reduce water consumption compared to 2020. We do have emergency regulations, a drought emergency order that was enacted in October of last year, extended to all states, all counties in the state. We have the State Water Resource Control Board adopted emergency regulations in January, specific to water waste and CCNR. HOA compliance requirements and enforcement protections for homeowners who choose not to irrigate their water or irrigate their landscapes. And then we are currently operating under the emergency regulation 2022-0018, which was effective in June. And that essentially requires all agencies, urban water suppliers, to implement all of their stage two measures. And it also bans the irrigation of non-functional turf for commercial, industrial, institutional customers, homeowner association, and common interest development customers with potable water for 1 year. Regarding SCV Water's activity, we enacted, the agency enacted, and the board enacted the stage two of the Water Shortage Contingency Plan and Water Conservation and Water Supply Shortage Ordinance in April of this year. So turning to our Water Shortage Contingency Plan, this plan is available online on our planning dashboard, but essentially it has these six criterion strategies that we implement in order to accomplish conservation. And you can see them listed here in order for us to achieve a 20% of voluntary conservation in stage two. Those include our drought programs, and these are our traditional programs that we offer, as well as some reformatted and repackaged programs, including our drought ready checkups that are slightly modified to focus on helping customers improve long-term water conservation, but also to prepare evaluate their water usage, their controllers, their sprinklers, provide kits to help them save water specific to those things that we have restricted as part of our water restrictions in the ordinance and the shortage plan. But we have all of these programs, lawn replacement rebates, all the way to education classes that we offer regularly and track. And we're seeing an increase in that activity, which I'll also share in my next presentation. There are water waste restrictions. These are common sense, pretty easy to implement to avoid wasting water. And you can see those range from allowing runoff to irrigating during rainfall, which we had some pretty decent rain around the valley today in various different pockets, as well as some thunder right outside the office here earlier. but we also have restrictions to avoid allowing irrigation runoff or dry season flow or urban drool, which is a new term that I learned over the last week. we want to try to avoid those things, because that water, that's drinking water that, you know, for all intents and purposes, was drinking water less than, 10 minutes prior to when it flowed on the sidewalk or when it entered the irrigation system. And that's drinking water that now is flowing down the gutter. So we try to prevent these common sense wastes of water. That helps us conserve quite a bit. We also have watering restrictions that are designed to help encourage conservation, but also to employ smart practices for our soil and our topography here in the valley. That includes even odd address 3 days per week watering, which is sufficient to maintain turf and other plants, specifically other plants, but turf can do well under 3 days per week watering in many cases. And then we offer 2 5-minute cycles, and that's because traditional sprinkler systems put out water at a rate that exceeds or contributes to urban drool after about 5 minutes. So if people water in 2 5-minute cycles 3 days per week per zone, they should be able to maintain healthy, probably a little bit deficit irrigated turf, but mostly healthy. And they'll also eliminate the irrigation runoff associated with running their sprinklers. And then we have watering time of day restrictions, November through April, 6 p.m. to 10 a.m. We're currently in the May through October, 8 p.m. to 9 a.m. That's to help customers put their water to work with avoid evaporation losses. I want to showcase some of our communications that the communication team and conservation developed to help engage the public. That includes our stage 2 drought bulletin that was disseminated in May. We have our non-functional turf bulletin that was disseminated electronically early in September and then in mail early in October. So we have got mailing and email out for non-functional turf to all those impacted customers, as well as frequently asked questions. We have online materials. We have social media, general media, bill messaging, all types of components that are out there promoting drought and water conservation, water use efficiency efforts during this, and what customers can do to save water, what the restrictions are, but also ways that the agency supports water conservation, water efficiency efforts. Okay, so turning now to SCB water demand performance, we'll look at our drought response conservation targets. With that, we want to kind of set this up with local weather conditions so we can see if those are impacting demands, and if so, how much. Drought conservation targets relative to the 15% voluntary conservation call, and then our statewide and regional drought performance comparison, where we look at our performance in conservation performance compared to our hydrologic region, as well as that to the entire state, as reported by the State Water Resources Control Board. So turning to local precipitation, surprisingly, though, September was kind of a month of somewhat extremes. Started off with the hottest September on record in some stories that I recall. It was definitely very hot early in September, that first week and a half. That was followed by some rainfall and some cooler temperatures. And then we had a heat wave come back late in the month. Nonetheless, when we look at station 204, our CIMA station, we can see that for September, evapotranspiration rates were actually down 8.4%. That's pretty significant for September. Year to date, they're still up 8.6%. So what does that mean? Well, that means that we should expect some reduction following the weather, because we've done quite a bit of work and foundational work to get a lot of smart controllers out in the community. So we should see our irrigation kind of starting to mold or meld towards the weather kind of looks like. And so in this case, we anticipate when we do normalization, we anticipate that there should be some reduction, somewhere around 3 to 5%, just looking at the weather. So that kind of helps us deal with nominal versus real performance. But we're gonna look at the nominal performance here today, but we also try to look at normalization. Precipitation. There was some precipitation in September, but nothing showed at the CIMA station. But as we've discussed before with other committees, there are various rain station engages throughout the community. This data is all pulled from CIMA station 204. So that doesn't mean that there weren't other stations that reported or recorded. It just means this station didn't. And so when we look at the calendar year to date, we're down about 72.4% calendar year 2022 versus 2020, and water year to date we're down about 12%, and that's because of that great rainfall that we had. Well, actually, water year should be zero because we're in a new water year. But this is for September. The water year was 12% below, and that's because of the great rainfall we had in November and December of October and November, December last year. But we also look at temperatures, the average maximum air temp. 2022, as noted, we can see how it impacts evapotranspiration. It's one of the key variables in the Penman-Monteith equation that's used to evaluate or modify Penman-Monteith equation that is used to develop evapotranspiration. The maximum air temp was down 93.4 degrees compared to 95.5 in 2020. So that kind of matches up that we're seeing, you know, somewhat of a reduction, a little bit of cooler temperatures, a little bit of cooler average max air temperatures. Okay. So now we're going to turn to our performance. This chart shows us our monthly production for 2020 in blue. 2022 is the brown bars, and then the 15% reduction, we're looking at the dashed line. And again, you know, we compare this because this is the baseline that the State Water Resources Control Board and the governor asked us to conserve voluntary compared to 2020. So we follow it month to month, and, you know, not all years are the same. 2020, we had some rain in March and April. We did not have that this year, and we can see that our consumption was significantly higher in March and April. But then in late April, the state, or the board, excuse me, adopted stage two of the water shortage contingency plan. And I would note that we can see that the delta between 2020 and 2022's usage is starting to increase as we move into the summer. That's pretty impressive, because that's a very difficult time to get those savings when we're in the peak of a pretty hot summer. But clearly customers are reducing their water consumption, and we did accomplish and surpassed our 15% target for the month of September. This chart shows kind of a different perspective, same data, but different perspective. We're looking at how do we compare in percent to 2020, and how does that performance track monthly and cumulatively? The blue line is the monthly conservation relative to that same month in 2020. And then the orange is the summation of all those months over time, the cumulative conservation. And then the black dashed line is kind of like the difference. So anything above it is greater than, that means the usage was greater, production was greater in 2022 relative to 2020 for that month. If it's below it, that means that we are below the same period in 2022. And then our targets are kind of in between the two gray lines here, which is our 11 to 20%, which is our stage two target. And the governor's target is 15% of 2020. So it's about the same, you know, a relative frame of reference here. But what I'd like to showcase is that we've had ups and downs, but focusing on the last kind of 5 months, if you will, from May through September, when stage two is implemented, we can see clearly that the community is starting to respond positively to the conservation messaging and taking actions, significant actions. We were cumulative conservation. We were tracking 4% over the same period from July through May of 2020. We are now tracking 1% below, which is shown here at the end. And then our consumption monthly was tracking 3% below, 8% below, 9% below, 9.1% below, and then we dropped to 17.2% for the month of September. And that's shown here where the red is outlined, this big drop in monthly consumption relative to 2020. So this means that for the month of September, our monthly conservation is falling within our target. We are continuing to trend in the right direction. But we're getting into the kind of strange months here where it can go. As we can see, you know, the fall and the spring can be high variability, wide variability in our projections. So this is a good place to be now, but we're going to be, you know, getting that message out to folks to try to get this to smooth out and conservation to stay within this bandwidth. How are we performing against the state and the South Coast Hydrologic Unit, our region? The state's always a month behind, and we can see that, you know, we're going to look at August because they haven't reported September, even though we have September numbers. Those will come out in October. But in August, we were down 10.1% in our cumulative for the month, and our cumulative for the July through August was up 0.5%. In the South Coast in August, it was 9.7%. So we outperformed the South Coast region by about 0.4% that month. And then we were still lagging behind in the cumulative, where the South Coast was down 2%. We're up 1.5%. And then for statewide, we kind of slightly underperformed by 0.4%, where the statewide was 10.5% for the month of August compared to August 2020, and cumulative is down 4%. So, you know, we're within the ballpark, but certainly that 17.2% increase in conservation in September is, you know, is something that we should recognize the community for taking action and saving water, particularly during a high irrigation month. And of course, for continuing to save water. If we look at how much gallons we have saved relative to 2020, just since May, taking out, you know, the March and April because of the difference in rain, we're looking at about 1.1 billion gallons. That's billion with a B. 1.1 billion gallons that our customers have saved since May of this year compared to May through September versus 2020. So on the radar, we are continuing with our non-functional turf ban outreach, and that includes getting out into the community, working with customers. We've ordered some sprinkler caps to help promote capping. You know, our non-functional turf effort essentially is turn it off, cap it, or convert it. We are encouraging customers to do those actions, take those actions. And we've recently bought sprinkler caps that are universal that can be used to, you know, cap a spray sprinkler without, you know, they basically can be converted in about a minute or two in most cases. They don't require you to fully remove the body from the ground. You just have to take the lid off, take the innards out, and then put this cap in, connect it, and then put the lid back on. So we have a couple thousand of those caps coming. We also ordered yard signs to help our customers promote those that are taking action by turning off their sprinklers for non-functional turf, or for those who are turning off their sprinklers and preparing to convert to drought-tolerant native landscapes. We have finished up our drought-ready videos, and those will be launching here shortly in various different formats. Again, we are preparing an SCD Community Conservation in Action to showcase many of the successes and amazing champions that our community has, you know, put before us in terms of this conservation success at this point. So we want to, you know, again, showcase those good practices and great activities our customers are doing. That may help other folks kind of get learn ways that they can incorporate conservation at their homes or increase their conservation. We are focusing on lawn replacement program priorities as we enter the fall and spring. This is the ideal, optimal time to convert your landscape and to plant native plants to take advantage of cooler temperatures and precipitation to get those plants established before doing that before the spring and the summer irrigation. And then we have a continued performance monitoring and adaptive management, which we always are constantly monitoring and adapting and working with the community and our customers and the tools in our toolbox and the arrows in our quiver to increase conservation in a customer-centric, education-centric manner. So in conclusion, drought conditions, of course, persist. We do have a third-year La Nina forecasted. Statewide drought emergency remains in effect. State Water Resources Board emergency regulations remain in effect. State Water Project water allocation at 5% for the second consecutive year. That's as we ended last year. We have the continued use of critical dry year supplies, as Sarah showed in her presentation and other presentations. SCB Water has stage two of its water shortage contingency plan ordinance in effect. Without conservation at this point, storage and banking recovery prolonged. We're seeing significant conservation, so that's great. We're pulling less water, but we want to increase you know, that conservation so that we don't pull those bank supplies, meaning that as wet years, if they do materialize, you know, we can quickly replenish those on a streamlined process. And then finally, current monthly conservation performance is on track for the month of September. I'm proud to report, but cumulative savings are trending down. But again, we still have work ahead of us. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Anybody online who wants to?
No, there's none.
Thanks. Okay, questions for Matt?
Thanks. My brain's still stuck on the quivers. Yeah. As someone who enjoys, or arrows in your quiver, as someone who enjoys archery with my kids, I appreciated that. Okay, so a few things. I'm intrigued by the term urban drool and wondering if we have suburban drool in that case.
Secondly, so hitting the 15% reduction target, yay, that's fantastic. That's wonderful to see. And big kudos to our customers for hitting that for the first time. And I hope we promote that on social media big time as a big thank you to them so that they see that what they're doing is working and hopefully continue that trend for us or for everybody. And also a big thank you to your team, Mr. Dickens. Your team, I know, has been working very, very hard to get us to hit that target. So thank you all for that. I'm excited to hear about the yard signs. I keep thinking I need one as my neighbors walk by my lawn because it's not looking so good. And I'd like to explain why. So I think the yard signs will be a great way to help people who are kind of in this transition period, as I am before I do some changes with natives, help them understand why. So I'll be putting myself on that list too. And then lastly, just a question. You mentioned that you guys have some drought ready videos ready to be released. I'm wondering if there's one on the lawn replacement program, because I feel like that would be a good one to have a video on, since it is kind of one of our more complex and multi-step programs that we have. That's it.
Thank you, Director Armitage. And I'm making notes here. And I believe one of the videos, it talks about the LRP. I think two of them are on restrictions and drought restrictions, kind of water shortage framework, kind of like how to comply and what the regulations and restrictions are and the best practice or smart practices. And then I think the third one's on lawn replacement. But to that point, we are currently working with our communications team to do a public webinar in November. That will be a lawn replacement, all you need to know kind of overview that will go into why these landscapes are important and how they're valuable and what the agency offers in terms of its programs, but then also from a process perspective to help customers kind of quickly see how to go through the process and what to expect.
Awesome. And will that be recorded in case people can't watch it live?
I hope so, because I would like to start building a reference library so that we don't have to do that. You know, we get a lot of questions on the nuance of the process. And so if we can answer those by watching a quick video and distill it to get that key salient information, I think that'd be a great tool for the community.
I agree. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Colley. Yeah, Matt. So just a comment. You talk a lot about the governor's call, 15%. Me personally, I like don't even care, because frankly, from the state's perspective, they give us 5% of our allocation, near zero. And the water that we're using here locally has basically nothing to do with the rest of the state. You know, perhaps some of the downstream users in Ventura County, but generally, we're using local groundwater, we're using bank supplies. The rest of the state doesn't have access to those. Even if we saved all of them, it wouldn't matter to them. So I'm more concerned from a policy standpoint as a board member with looking at our needs locally. And I recall last year you talked about the idea that February and March would be the optimum time in your mind to ramp up to the next stage of the water supply, the shortage plan. And then we didn't really meet that. We talked about it early, and then we didn't actually act on it. We didn't do anything. And we ended up several months later than what you talked about as the optimum target. So I want to make sure that this year, I'm going to ask that we bring that forward. We have projected another dry year, and every drop that we save now is going to help us potentially later. As a board member, my goal is to minimize the total pain that our customers endure in a drought. It's not to minimize the pain this month or even this year, it's to try to minimize the pain over the long term. And so I want to discuss the possibility of getting to stage three relatively soon. And
using that conservation, that extra conservation, hopefully that's above the governor's target in order to be prepared for 2-3 years from now or longer. So I just want to bring that up. I'm hoping that if you think that the optimum time is February, March, that we're on target to do that and not, again, delaying and not talking about it until it's something beyond the target you thought was optimal. So hoping to look further down the road.
Other questions from directors for Matt? No, I don't have any either, Matt. So thank you very much. And I would echo Director Armitage's comment that your team gets a lot of credit for the 17% reduction in the month of September. So well done. And with that, your reward is to go on to item 5.2, which is an update on conservation activities and performance.
Unfortunately, I'll have to go through the whole process again, Director Ford. So give me 1 second here.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's the, am I sharing the right screen? What screen do you guys see? I don't know.
Jupiter.
You see Jupiter?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's a nice picture of Jupiter.
Some storm clouds there. That
James Webb telescope, I'll tell you what, that is an amazing, amazing thing. Okay, here we go. All right, so thank you, Chair Ford and members of the committee. This presentation is fairly quick. It's going to review kind of water conservation program updates from kind of our normal operating perspective. But again, as you can imagine, there is overlap. And so, you know, just bear that in mind. But we do track various different frames of reference and from different statistical frames so that we can communicate and talk empirically and soundly on various different topics there and ways to evaluate conservation. Okay, so tonight's presentation will cover programmatic performance for residential, commercial, industrial, institutional customers and landscape customers. We'll look at our conservation savings performance relative to our normal conservation target, and then we'll conclude with some program updates. Okay, so first, we're going to turn our attention to residential programs. Residential consumption typically is about 51%. This does not include multifamily, but typically residential, single family residential is about 51% of our consumption. And then what we do here is we look at these various different programs, and we're going to look at fiscal year to date compared to fiscal year to date from the previous year. And I think what you can see here is pretty clear. We're up in our home checkups by, you know, a considerable amount. Our conservation kits are down a little bit, and that's because those get handed out during the checkups, whereas last year and the year before, we were still kind of in COVID safe-at-home protocols, so we were handing out a lot of kits, but now we're doing a lot of checkups. But we're also seeing a lot more requests. So the WaterSmart Workshop is currently that performance is subject to kind of online marketing and social media marketing. And so we have a lot of controls over that in terms of how participation. And right now, because we're in the summer, we're trying to push more hands-on, but I think we'll start to see some more conservation WaterSmart workshops during the winter month for folks to do things at their homes kind of in a DIY manner. Increases in smart controller rebates. We've got big increases in lawn replacement projects. This is 11 that have been completed, but there's another 30 that are in the queue that our team is working with residential. So that's significant. Pool cover rebates are up. So folks who own pools are also wanting to conserve water in ways that they can. Our healthy and efficient landscape program rebates, those include high efficiency nozzles, drip irrigation, pressure regulating bodies, master pressure regulating devices. Those are increasing by a factor of four, but doubling. And then our notices, the high consumption letters, water saving opportunity letters, leak alert letters, and our phone calls to customers are increased. But we're also seeing customers kind of take advantage of those how to conserve water videos that we created, I would say back in 2018, 2019. Those are really good short 3 to 5 minute videos that go over a lot of things very concisely that you can do on your own, and that are pretty easy ways to save water, look for leaks, and fix certain types of leaks, and conduct a quick irrigation inspection. In terms of our CII programs, participation right now is still a little bit lagging. Those go in cycles, but I think that we're starting to see the commercial sector start to become more engaged. We have a lot of interest and activity from various different customers for our programs. They just haven't materialized into those changes or that treatment, if you will. But we are seeing projects, unit surveys, commercial surveys, toilet retrofits, urinal retrofits, lots of CII specific things are starting to come into the queue, like I said. But performance is down a little bit relative to last year. Same with our large landscape program. Just to note that the way staff reports this in our tracker is they don't report the numbers until they've been funded. So we had a lot of projects that completed in September, but they won't get funded until October. So they'll probably show up in October's or November's reports. But right now we're kind of on par with what we've typically see for the first quarter of program participation for our landscape customers. Okay, so turning to our conservation savings performance, this is essentially a view of our normal conservation or interim conservation target, and that essentially is a carrying or a status quo of the SBX 7-7, which was a 20% reduction in gallon per capita day of our 2010 baseline by 2020. And what we were saying is that we'll continue that 2% reduction per year for 2021, 2022, and then we look at today's population times the baseline compared to today's population times the 24% reduction in gallon per capita day. And as we can see here, similar to what we're seeing in our drought conservation numbers, we kind of went over the bar in February and March, and that's because we just had a very dry, we're talking a couple thousand acre feet, 3,000 acre feet, in those 2 months over what we typically see because of the dry periods early in the year. But then we saw conservation start to pick up in April and continue through September. Year to date, we're down 8.9% compared to our 24% target, so we're surpassing it. And that's about 4,786 acre feet below the dashed line, which is what we would anticipate today's population using the 24% reduction in GPCD. So that's pretty good number there, about close to 4,800 acre feet of water we've saved compared to our already 2% conservation target. So that's important to remember. That's on top of our 2% standing conservation target for the year. All right, conservation program updates. I'm proud to present to the committee and also to the agency that the agency received its third consecutive WaterSense Excellence Award this year. We received one in 2019, 2020, and 2021 for work that we've done relative to our multifamily apartment complex program, but also to promoting that program to the industry, advising the EPA on how to improve that tool, and then also most importantly, successfully utilizing that tool to achieve significant conservation savings here in the Valley. For the first three phases, which is about 8 sites, those three sites are saving verified 90 million gallons per year, and verified have saved since the program started over 210 million gallons of water for just those 8 sites. So that's very significant conservation. That tool helps us prioritize, identify where we can get the best savings, which means that we're going to get improved cost effectiveness of our conservation programs by reaching out and engaging with those customers. And we have a lot more on the radar, and we have a lot more work to accomplish. And so I think this story will continue to move forward for us. So congratulations to the committee. Congratulations to the agency, our conservation team, and to the community. This is an honor that requires all of us working towards successful conservation programs and promoting the WaterSense tools and products. So In terms of conservation policy updates, I do want to share that the AB 1668, SB 606 standards, methodologies, implementation recommendations have been released for the urban water use objectives by DWR. In addition to that, SB 1157 was signed by Governor Newsom, which essentially reduces what was supposed to be a 55 gallon per person per day by 2025, 52 and a half down to 50 by 2030, has been reduced to 47 by 2025 and 42 gallons per person per day by 2030. That was signed into law. So that means that that urban water use objective is going to tighten up. But I've also have the memorandum of recommendations by DWR here that I've been reading and reviewing, and that's going to focus on residential outdoor standards, dedicated irrigation outdoor standards, commercial, industrial, institutional smart practices and performance standards, as well as variances and compliance with the rules. So it does look as though, you know, those standards are coming out. And so what that means is that once we understand those standards, those mandates and those requirements, then we can start to conduct our update of the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan to identify strategies, measures, and programs that we can implement to successfully accommodate and meet those compliance requirements, where the savings are, where the most cost-effective savings are, and develop that program. So just wanted to share that with the committee. Regarding conservation program updates, I think I shared before that we are launching and have launched our residential efficiency targets. That's our Water Smart Allocation and Water Efficiency Targets Program. The integration phase was launched in September 2022. That essentially means that by the end of the first quarter or sometime in the last quarter of this fiscal year or second quarter of next year, we should have water budgets available for all of our divisions, as well as for residential customers, as well as for dedicated irrigation meter customers. And that would be a big increase and improvement in that tool, which currently, I want to say, impacts about 60% of our customers. So looking forward to having that. And the integration also will allow us to incorporate these new methodologies so that we can monitor performance throughout the year relative to what the urban water use objectives are going forward. It also will allow us to create water budgets relative to the applicable model water efficient landscape ordinance as it was designed. So we can run multiple types of efficiency targets based off of the profile of the inventory that we are providing this data for. In addition to that, we have our lawn replacement program. Our HOA outreach and engagement efforts continue to work. We work with property managers. We have consultants. We work with property managers, HOA boards. We are considering working with a CCNR template consultant to develop. This would be a legal consultant in the HOA CCR world that would help us identify ways to improve or modernize CCNRs, as well as a template that we can from that community and from that sector that would help something that we could present to HOA boards and management property firms to update their CCNRs. So this is an exciting opportunity for us here to perhaps make that process easier for our customers and get HOAs modernized into current framework and reference. Also, we have been lobbying for quite a while at the state level and at the national level to make tax-exempt water efficiency improvements. This is something that is already in law for energy efficiency products. I'm happy to announce that the governor did sign AB 2142 that makes California tax exemption of lawn replacement rebates. We were hoping, the work that I do through Alliance for Water Efficiency, we were hoping that the Congress in the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, would incorporate the water efficiency tax exemptions or tax exemption for water efficiency improvements, but that was not included in the legislation. So California is now tax exempt on lawn replacement rebates, but we're still working with our national partners and others to try to get that on a national level for federal tax exemptions for water efficiency efforts. Lastly, this is something that came out of another committee, but it's something that we are researching, and that is another pilot program. And this would be pool removal incentives. There are agencies that rebate customers to remove and fill and landscape their pool areas. Pools typically use about as much as grass. But this is something that we might be able to incorporate or we can consider incorporating in our LRP program. Nonetheless, we're still at the fledgling process of this effort. And then we got a lot of research to identify how the process works, the uptake in the process, pitfalls, and outcomes. So quite a bit to do in that pilot program research, but we are looking at it. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or comments.
Thank you, Matt. Any questions from anybody online?
There is none.
Questions from members of the committee, from Matt, for
Turbiton. Thanks. Thank you again for your presentation. A couple comments. Regarding the maybe less enthusiastic reception in the commercial area for conservation, I just wanted to mention that one of the ideas that was shared at the Region 8 program recently by Long Beach Water Agency was they started something called the Blue Restaurant Program. So they started with just restaurants. And what they do is they recognize restaurants that are more water efficient or maybe hit some type of conservation target, I'm not sure. And then they promote the heck out of them and they're on their social media and any other information they share out to the community, which I thought was really interesting. So I don't know, I just wanted to throw out that concept to you to see if that's something you'd be interested in or could maybe morph into something different but similar. So throwing that out. Congratulations on the third consecutive WaterSense Excellence Award to you and your team. I think that just confirms what we already know, that you guys are amazing. Regarding the residential efficiency targets, I don't remember how that's all calculated, but I just wanted to ask, you know, how are we making sure that for people who are already like super efficient water users, are we making sure that we're not going to be placing, you know, unrealistic targets additionally on them if they're already doing everything they can to conserve? And then lastly, for the tax exempt rebates legislation that just passed, yay for that. Is it retroactive to some point or is it just going forward from now on? That's it.
You're muted, Matt.
You couldn't hear me typing. I just said the most amazing thing, but I'm going to have to try to figure it out again. thank you for sharing the information from Long Beach. That sounds like a great opportunity. I do want to just clarify that the commercial customer, they're definitely participating, and there's eagerness and there's excitement in that community to conserve, and they are functionally conserving. It's just that the program, as they're finalized, hasn't started materializing in those numbers. So we want to clarify that. Nonetheless, you bring up a great point, and that is ways to identify champions of the community. And I think that that restaurant program sounds like a great opportunity to recognize those that are going above and beyond to be efficient with water usage. So I will reach out to my Long Beach contacts to learn more about that. We did a water champion program in the past during a great leak sweep that was similar to that. But nonetheless, I think that there's an opportunity to work continue to work and increase engagement with the commercial sector. Thank you for the congratulations on the WaterSense Excellence Award. Again, I want to make sure that we recognize all the agency, our communications team, my staff, my team, all of our partners that participate in the community. It's an award that takes everybody, you know, working diligently towards water conservation. So I thank you for that. But also want to share that recognition of all of our partners and all of the contributors. Regarding the WET and WASA, how do we handle low water users? Typically, if your water usage is pretty efficient, it'll show up as being super efficient or efficient on the water efficiency targets. They're set to the standards. And the standards, as we see them, while they are becoming more constrained, I guess, and more prescriptive over time, for those super low water users, I don't see how this will affect them very much. This typically is going to impact those folks with usage that exceeds it significantly. And what's great about the data is it provides that kind of gauge for you to be able to look on there and determine the value, how much water is over your allocation or efficiency target, and the value of that water. But it sets up some really good information, and it was essential to our legacy agency's success in conservation, and I think it'll be critical and essential to us going forward, particularly when we start to look at if we are outside of the urban water use objectives throughout the year. We're going to want to dive into that data to identify where those outliers are occurring so that we can help engage those customers instead of placing burdens, broad brush burdens across the community. We would like to do targeted outreach to incorporate that most effective conservation expression. And then lastly, I'm sorry, there was one other comment, but I missed it. The tax exemption rebates.
Yes.
I'll get back to you on the tax exemption rebates. I think they're going forward, but let me read the law again. I didn't look at that specifically. I wanted to see what all was included in it. And so I looked at that specifically, but I didn't look at when the applicable date was. So let me get back to you on that.
That's okay. I can look it up too. I just thought if you knew off the top of your head. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Matt? Director Crowley.
Yeah, Matt. Just a minor point. I'm not sure why you use gallons as a unit for water in a lot of these big numbers. It actually, I'd prefer if you could to stick with acre feet, because that's what we typically as a water agency use for large quantities of water. And I find that it's very difficult for me to listen to your presentation while I'm doing the calculation in my head. And it makes it more difficult for you to communicate information. So if you could sort of think about when you're using gallons, if acre feet would be more useful to us.
Director Colley, for clarification, I think are you talking about the performance chart where I mentioned acre feet, but it has a connection to gallons per capita day?
You gave total gallons of savings.
A couple times.
In huge numbers. I mean, let's see. There was in your previous presentation, there was some billions. You wanted to stress that it was with a B, which made it even more difficult for me to get the three orders of magnitude and to try to, it's just very difficult for me to convert on the fly. And I'm not sure what advantage there is in talking about billions of gallons of water rather than acre feet of water, which is what we buy generally. So it'd just be more useful to me if I understand when you're talking about gallons per capita per day, that's a unit that I understand. And I wouldn't want you to try to acre feet per person per day. That is not a unit that we ever use. But
okay, I'll stick to acre feet. Not a problem. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any comments?
I have one brief comment. And because it relates to the acre feet per year, I think, we're going to be in an ongoing water challenge. I'm not going to say ongoing drought because we know that comes and goes, but regulatory challenges, et cetera. So it's important that these programs continue. However, I disagree with a commonly said phrase, which is anything we do makes a difference. I want to make sure that when we're doing things, they are top down, high value added. Like I think the turf shutoff has potential for huge savings for the non-functional turf if implemented, versus this statement of pools, bulldoze your pool, fill it in, and put in some kind of irrigation or plants or concrete. One seems to clearly be high return on investment, and the other one might be more of a feel good thing. And I think we need to continue to focus on high return on investment things for water and not try to do all of the above approach, because because it doesn't make sense mathematically. And talking about things in acre feet will let us know whether that's a huge savings or whether it's a little savings. Because, yeah, the conversion between acre feet and gallons is significant.
Yeah, well, it just, yeah, I round it off in my head and whatnot, but it just, it's taking up bandwidth in my brain that makes it more difficult to listen to the rest of what you have to say.
Don't do that, Director Colley.
Getting old and senile, so the bandwidth is decreasing. Thank you.
Sure. Director Gutzeit, I appreciate the comment. I just want to note that as part of our research, we do look at cost-effective conservation to, and then compare it in a suite, a portfolio suite of options. So that's something that, you know, the research helps us identify those things. But I agree, we want to be cost-effective. We want to be effective and efficient with our resources and our program expression at all times.
Yeah, and when I say not just cost-effective, but water savings effective, right? So if we can focus on one program and get 10% conservation, what about 15 programs for 10% conservation, that makes more sense in terms of administration and hassle being easier. Is kind of my general point. Nothing in specific. I want to make sure that we don't overreach and not know that we're getting a return for it.
Okay, thank you.
Look at ROI.
Yeah.
Matt, I just had wanted to thank you for pursuing the or lending the agency support to the tax exemption on water conservation projects and continue the work on the federal level, because I think handing the customer a 1099 form at the end of the day is kind of a, well, it's a downer, I guess. You know, you do the right thing and you save some money, and then the federal and state governments say, hey, we're here for our cut. Yeah. So please continue to pursue that. Appreciate that. And then finally, kudos on the Water Sense Award for everybody. But you would be forgiven for running down the hallway yelling 3P, 3P. So well done on that one as well. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Chair Ford.
And with that, we move on to item 6, the committee planning calendar. It's attached to your packet comments. The next meeting is a fairly extensive one.
So good. I like it where we can read it like this.
Yeah. Some of the committees are what's going on in the future is so extensive that
the engineering committee just keeps getting the pipe smaller and smaller as they get it all on the sheet.
The fonts, we need the magnifying glass to read the fonts. Anyway, so with that, no comment, I assume one count, I guess. So, we are adjourned, so thank you, staff, for everything you did for us. Appreciate it. And have a good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.